This podcast is going to be worth your attention and time. Alex, did you just cough? You're supposed to be the quiet one. You're supposed to be the one that sits there in the corner whilst I do my job, and you're distracting me out here with your coughing. Take some water. Are you done? Are you okay? Seriously. No first aid needed. Great. Alex, as long as Alex isn't coughing, we can do this podcast. Because I've actually got, it might surprise you to know, I've got a special guest with me today. It's not just me on the podcast. Do you reckon I could fill half an hour of just talking? Yeah, the fact probably, that you're both so enthusiastic about that makes me think I talk way too much. Maybe I'll do it. Just we've got a break coming up over Christmas. I might just need to do a podcast myself, interview myself, talk about myself. But today it's not about me. It never is. It's about our friend, Eden's very own...
Josh Goddard.
Josh Goddard.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, good.
Yeah? First time on the podcast.
Yeah, first time on.
But not the last, we hope.
Hopefully not, no.
Some of the Eden Gathering followers of the podcast, but also our Instagram will know who you are, but might not know that this is your voice.
Yes.
So you are Josh, who heads up the social action.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
How long have you been doing that for Eden?
Oh, maybe since September-ish.
Do we still call it social action?
I call it social action. I think its official name is Eden Acts.
Oh, yeah, that is catchier.
So I need to learn to start using that rather than social action. But
we like recognise you from the the Instagram videos.
Yes,
and that.
My face has been on the Instagram a couple of times.
Yeah, how long have you been around at the Forge?
Oh, I think officially probably about a year and a half.
Yeah.
But have been in and about the Forge since it moved to Thurston.
Oh, cool. So when was that? Like 6 years ago? Less than that?
Quite a few years ago
now. Yeah. So you're from the area. How old are you? Can I ask that?
Yeah, no, I'm 26.
Same age as me.
There you go. Yeah. Been around Suffolk since I was born. Bury for 15 years.
Yeah.
I've spent a few years up in Cambridge and things like that, but mostly around this area.
Yeah. And growing up in a Christian home or?
Yeah, growing up in a Christian home. Really sort of good early family life.
Yeah.
Sort of my small family and the kind of larger family outside of that, all Christian. So sort of brought up through church.
Yeah. And that was a positive experience for you? Enjoyed
it? It was
church,
interesting that my parents were my youth workers for a time.
Oh.
Which has its challenges.
Yeah.
But was also really good. A lot more pressure when you get home and your parents ask you what you learnt in the morning.
Absolutely.
It was them teaching you. So,
what sort of church upbringing was it? Was it quite modern or quite traditional? Or?
It was a community church in Newmarket. It was not horrendously modern, but not really old-fashioned as well.
Yeah,
I think it was a good mixture,
But you found it engaging and encouraging.
Yeah, I had a lot of good friends in there.
And then did you study? Positive. Did you go to uni or anything?
Yes, I did.
Anything?
So I went to uni a few years late. So I think I was about 20, 21 when I left for uni.
Yeah.
Never wanted to do it. Always hated the idea of uni.
So you put it off?
Put it off. Didn't want to go. And then just decided, I want to be a youth worker. So been turned down for a few jobs because I didn't have a degree. So I thought I better just go and do it.
So you've always had a passion for youth work and...
Yeah, since I was about... 11, 12 years old.
What do you think set that off then?
Well, I think it helps that I was something like fourth generation youth worker in my family. So it was always kind of drummed into me from a very young age that youth work was important. Actually, the next generation of people need to be looked after. Mm. Otherwise you lose them. So that was sort of really drummed in. And more than anything, I just really enjoyed helping.
Yeah.
Kind of spent many years trying to work out whether that was a volunteer type thing or if I wanted to do that as my career.
Yeah. So how do you go to uni for youth work? What is the degree in?
So
and
the
where
degree
did you go?
So I went to a place called Ridley Hall, which is actually an ordination, Anglican ordination college. But they were doing
You always wanted to do like Christian youth work?
So this is the strange thing. So I'd always done Christian youth work. And I went to do a Christian theology degree with like a youth work stream.
Okay.
But while I was working So while I was doing the degree, my placement was a much more secular youth work role.
Okay.
So for a Christian charity, but it was very much a secular role, in terms of just being in the community and just kind of identifying lead and dealing with it. So then I think coming out of uni, I was very much confused as to which way I wanted to go.
Yeah.
Whether I wanted to go down the church work or the community work or...
So what, are you a vicar or something?
No. So it's not an ordination degree.
Right.
And I didn't actually finish the degree.
Okay.
So I did about 2.5 years. So I got about halfway through my third year when I found out I'd failed second year.
Oh.
So it was really late on that we kind of, they were trying to work out a way to get around it, but then couldn't. So it was quite late on.
So what, how did that make you feel?
This is the thing. I knew I wasn't academic, which is why I didn't want to do uni in the first place.
So did how did you get on with school and that?
I did. So my GCSEs, I did better than I expected. But then A-levels, when it was much more essay-based, I really struggled, but could talk it. If someone asked me about it, I could tell you about it and have really good conversations. It's just when it comes down to writing it down on paper, it all goes to pot. Which is exactly what happened at uni. And I'm not going to say it wasn't partly my fault as well for not putting the effort in, because I didn't put much effort in.
Partying with vicars.
I just really struggled just with one being away from everyone.
So where was it?
Cambridge. So I lived in Cambridge while I was there. So it's not too far.
Yeah. And it's a nice place to live, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, just sort of didn't particularly enjoy the course itself that much, which doesn't give you much passion when you go to sit down and write an essay.
Yeah.
But absolutely loved the job.
Yeah.
Which is, that was a real shame. The job had to finish when the course did.
Yeah. But so did that kind of rock, did you feel like that kind of rocked your calling?
Oh yeah, 100%.
If you've felt like you wanted to do this since you were like 11 years old or however old you said, and then you're on this path and all of a sudden it's like, I've tried and I've failed at uni, you know, not a life.
Yeah.
Like, what did that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I spent many years before uni believing that it was my calling and nothing was happening. So there was a little bit...
What did you do in that dead space then?
So I was always helping out. Like I kind of jumped around a few churches really who needed a male youth worker. Right. And that was kind of like how I led my church life at the time. Right, it was a guy who needs a youth worker. So I sort of jumped around different churches that needed me effectively. And then kind of thought, okay, I need to do something if I want this to be a career. And I actually applied for a job at Romsey Mill, which is the charity that I worked for as a placement.
Okay, yeah.
Not realizing it was like a high-level overseeing role. I thought it was a sort of on the ground youth worker. Yeah. So they sent me a letter back that said, we can't give you the job you applied for, but we do have a student position available.
Yeah.
And we'd like to invite you for an interview for that.
Cool.
And I sort of put it down and went, nope, not doing uni.
Yeah, yeah.
And then really had this challenge of actually, if this is your calling, then maybe you just need to do it. Like maybe this
and
is your
God
opportunity.
Will make a way sort of thing.
So I went for the interview. About 3 days later, I went for the interview for the degree, got offered both on the spot.
Yeah.
And I was driving back to Bury and phoned my mum on hands-free and said, I'm moving to Cambridge in 2 weeks. And it really was that quickly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't till...
And did that feel like an answer to prayer at the time?
Yeah, definitely. It was a real... Even though I failed, I can still look back and say that was a God moment.
Wow, yeah, yeah. That's good.
Of getting
like
me to uni, yeah.
Amazing thing to be able to say, I guess.
Now I can say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I was sort of thrown in, and then it was probably like 6-7 weeks into uni when I was like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
You know, a couple of weeks into the course and writing your first essay, and it's like, what have I done? You know, you're like, never wanted to be here. And that sudden realization of, okay. And I sort of muddled through for a couple of years.
Were you honest about where you're at?
With certain people?
Did you have to lie to yourself to try and be like...
Yeah,
because I find sometimes when we think God's given us something, we have to lie our way into positivity sometimes. And I think sometimes
definitely.
That's a good thing of like, you know, a choice to be positive even when, you know, the house is burning down around you.
Yeah.
But also it can be a bit of denial sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we had a really small course. There was only sort of 9 or 10 people on the course. Mm. So I think it was quite intimate, very discussion-based. So you have to save face kind of thing. You feel like you have to save face in that situation. Otherwise, everyone will know you're struggling. Yeah. But yeah, I think there is that kind of, okay, I really believe that God put me here for a reason. And I'm struggling. And I think you then put a lot of pressure on yourself to perform.
Yeah.
And not take a moment to say, okay, why is it? Is God brought me here to get a first?
Yeah.
Or has God brought me here for an experience or to learn?
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
Kind of thing. Which,
so how did you get there? How did you get to that place of seeing it through that lens? Because I imagine that took time. But
yeah, so probably it was only recently, really. Last year, possibly even early this year kind of thing. So when it all finished, I had to move back to Bury, and I still believe it was the right thing to do for my own mental health and a lot of other things. But
did you get quite low then?
Yeah, definitely. And I think if I had stayed on till the end of the course, I would have been in a really bad way. But actually I came home, and there's still a lot of issues I had to deal with in terms of, I've failed. Yeah. Have I kind of ruined God's calling for me? Mm. Was this my one chance? He's kind of like giving it to me. And there was that feeling of, okay, I failed. So that's it. I'm going to work retail for the rest of my life now.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff like that I had to work through.
What did it look like working through that?
For me, it was a lot of anger to begin with.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of shouting and a lot of screaming, and I'd hesitate to call it prayer, but I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I think there was a couple of moments where I think my emotions spilled out into areas that I didn't want them to be.
Right.
Which, so like family life, it got to the point where I was quite angry.
Yeah.
And we'd have tiny kind of debates in the family, and out of nowhere I'd just explode.
Really?
And my family would just kind of sit there and be like, what, okay, let's just sort of leave him, let him go. And and in football, it's an easy place for your anger to come out. And there was moments like that where I was like, okay, these areas that I don't want to be like this.
Mm. I'm surprised sitting here. I don't know you very well at all, but like, I would never, ever put you down. Is that because of a transformation then? Are you a different person sitting here now?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I was speaking to someone the other day.
I can think of like opposite words to describe you, really. Like you look like someone that's so chilled.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I could trigger you, but...
Yeah. Hopefully not now.
No.
I was speaking to someone the other day, and they kind of said, I met you for the first time, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You were so angry.
Yeah.
You spent the whole evening kind of...
And was it around uni, or was it deeper rooted than that?
I think it was deep. There was a lot of things happened with our family sort of before I went to uni, which I hadn't properly dealt with. So I lost my dad almost 6 years ago now.
Oh,
so just before I went to uni, and I don't think I ever properly mourned that before I went to uni. So that was a big thing to then have to deal with when you're away from family and stuff like that.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. So.
So that happened. So give me the timeline of that then, sorry.
So it's 6 years ago in March that we lost my dad.
When you went to uni.
And then I went to uni 5 years ago, four years ago.
So like a year afterwards.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But
just over a year afterwards it would have been.
So what happened when you lost your dad?
So we knew it was coming.
Right.
He had end-stage liver disease. So he was given 6 months to live, I think, or 6 weeks.
What was your relationship like with your dad?
This was an interesting one. So, as I said, we grew up in a very nice kind of family situation. We were really well off. We had a nice house, all of that. But he did his job. He came home, he did more work, and then he went to bed. So I think in the moment we didn't really see anything of it. And then it all kind of came together where it became a real struggle to live with him. He had a lot of mental health issues as well. Stopped taking his medication, and actually became quite difficult to live with him, to the point where we couldn't live with him anymore.
Right.
So at the point he was diagnosed, I think we were on holiday, we get a phone call from the doctors. We weren't living with him at this point.
So was he in the church at this point?
Yes. Yeah. So he was still attending the church we grew up in. and we were attending.
That must be quite hard to negotiate kind of, I guess, expectations of what, you know, because if you work for a church, you're holier than everyone else, right? But you're actually not even living with your dad. You're not like the household that people expect you to be. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. So at this time I was doing a year out with Youth for Christ in Newmarket.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And obviously that suffered massively. And we all ended up living in Newmarket with our grandparents. But yeah, so I think at that point, it's not that I hated him in any way. I think I was just done. And I didn't want to put any more effort into that relationship.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's a sign of where my mental health was as well at the time, is when we get this phone call that says, you know, we think, well, at that point, they think he had cancer. I thought he had cancer. So I was kind of like, it doesn't bother me. Wow. Like, I hadn't planned to see him again. So anyway,
whether
he was alive or not. So it was a really strange one. And actually, looking back now, that time then of him being diagnosed with sort of liver disease, I had a real challenge from God of, actually, this guy is just a guy who needs his family around him now.
Yeah.
As difficult it has been, you know, my mum never divorced him. In her mind, they were still very much married. She still loved him. It was just quite difficult to live with him at the time. And it was a safety thing. So we, as a family, were still around him then.
Yeah.
Because of this kind of challenge I had of, actually, he just needs his sons.
So did you communicate that? Did you have to take that to the family, like, hey, I know this has happened, but I feel like I've heard from God around us just being around? Or do you think everyone kind of
there was
felt
a general feeling,
yeah,
I think, of, we all kind of at the same point were kind of like, actually, this is just a man who needs his family.
Yeah.
So we had to push aside a lot of our feelings and just go and see him and spend time with him. And actually, through that, I think we had, you know, the last 6 months of his life were possibly the best 6 months relationship we'd ever had with him in our entire lives. Yeah. Which was incredible. You know, I can look back now and off people find it really strange, because I look back at the year I lost my dad. Now I can look back and say it was one of the best years of my life, because we had this such amazing relationship.
Wow.
With him when he was sat in a hospital bed. And actually, he was one of the reasons I kept my faith through all of that, because I'd go into hospital with my faith being like, you know, why is this happening?
Yeah.
Dealing with all these emotions. And he'd be sat in his, effectively, what was his deathbed, preaching to me.
It's like we often ask, why do these things happen?
Yeah.
And then you hear stories like that and you're like, man, like, not saying that God gave that to him, not saying that that was, you know, I wouldn't stretch to say that was always God's plan. Or, you know, I don't know where I stand on that theologically. But something good came from it.
100%. Yeah, definitely.
Because if your dad was still alive, he would be dead to you anyway, right?
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah. And you know, it's the perfect example of, you know, not God causes these things to happen, but God can take good from any situation.
Yeah.
And actually, I look back now and say, I'm so glad that I can say I had those 6 months, even though I don't have a dad anymore, rather than having to say he's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
And especially, I'm so glad I had that time and made that decision to go and see him, because if we had have lost him, then those feelings of never seeing him again, I would have had to deal with at some point without him here, and I think that would have been so much more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm so glad for that time we had.
And what sort of wisdom did he offer in the final stages?
There was all sorts. I mean,
because I think surely that just brings you to a place of really clarifying for where you know exactly what's important and what your priorities are.
I mean, there was a couple of things. You know, like, I always used to plan things to go and tell him, like, so we both supported Arsenal and he was a big Arsenal fan. So I used to go in and tell him that. yeah, that's probably the worst bit about the story. I used to go in and tell him the results.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always used to think that was what he'd want to hear.
Yeah.
But when you get in, all he would talk about was his faith and God.
Interesting.
And took much more towards the end, how excited he was to be going to heaven to, you know, go and meet God. And, you know, the stuff he used to talk about there was absolutely incredible. And it was a real moment of not necessarily him giving me like, oh, here's a bit of, you know, wisdom or here's a bit of advice for you. It was just a real, for me, it was like, you know, oh, you know, me and my little faith that he sat there with so,
so
much faith.
Strengthened your faith, right?
Yeah, definitely. It made me look at my own faith.
Okay.
And look at my own doubt and be like, okay, you know, why are you doubting this when he's so sure of it?
Yeah.
And then 2 days before he actually died, he managed to bring the guy in the bed opposite him to Jesus.
Wow.
He was praying with the chaplains in the hospital, and the guy came over afterwards and said, what on earth were you doing?
Yeah.
That was so strange. And Dad sat with him for hours and just chatted about his faith. And this guy was like, man, I want
goosebumps.
That. Yeah. He was like, man, I want that. And, you know, literally two days before he died, and you think...
So that was one of his last things he did was bring someone
definitely
to faith.
And that's something I always remember, something I carry with me.
Yeah.
That kind of faith in that moment for him to... But spend then, what he knew was some of his last hours to spend that chatting with someone.
Gosh.
It was incredible.
But then after he passed.
Yeah.
So you've obviously had to push a lot aside just to get to a place where you can enjoy 6 months.
Yeah.
Do you think that then opened the floodgates on that a bit after he passed? Or do
not
you think
straight
it was
away.
Kind of fresh,
new I think
anger? And
we spent probably a year. I think it felt like we were frozen. We just sort of spent a year not doing anything. You know, I was working, I think, at Halfords at the time, but life was stale, life just held. You know, we weren't going anywhere. And I think a year after that was when we decided, okay, we almost sat down as a family and said, he doesn't want this for us.
Yeah.
He wants us, and this is a point for us to move on and actually do something now. And that was when I went to uni. And I think that was the time it all came out.
Yeah.
Was suddenly being away. I'd spent a whole year just really with the family.
Yeah.
And had so much support around me, which was fantastic. And then going to uni, which I know is only half an hour down the road.
Yeah, but it's too much of a change, right?
Yeah. But I felt isolated. And then these issues sort of started cropping up of, okay, you know, I've got to deal with this stuff now.
But I can see why then. So if you've had a conversation with your family about, come on, like, let's go and let's pursue the next stage of our lives. Yeah. Then you get these two yeses, the degrees on the cards.
Yeah.
You're thinking, man, God's answered all my prayer. And then a year and a bit later, 2 years later, it all falls apart.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you're back to not square one, but like
worse than you were
before. Yeah.
It definitely felt like I was back where I started. I felt like I hadn't gone anywhere. And I had conversations with people where I was like, you know, I've just wasted 3 years of my life effectively.
So what did you do?
Well, I'll be honest, in the moment I stopped again.
Yeah.
And I spent half a year to a year doing nothing. I worked retail, and I hated it. And I
were
spent
you in church at this time?
Not really. So I never really properly got into a church in Cambridge. I'd go occasionally, and I don't think I ever fully lost my faith. I just lost my passion completely. I went occasionally when I felt like, you know, if it got to a couple of months and I hadn't been, it was like, okay, I better go.
Yeah.
You know, tick that box.
Yeah, yeah.
And I deliberately pick a church that was quite big and I could sneak in and I could sneak out.
Yeah.
And, you know, they offered a free coffee to everyone who was new, and I, you know, deliberately didn't go too much so I could get a free coffee every time because no one knew me, you know?
Nice, yeah.
And then coming back, I, again, just didn't really get into a church. I went to the Forge occasionally because that's where my family went and kind of joined along with them. But other than that, it was just, you know, I remember days where I just sat in the car outside work and just be like, you know, what am I doing? You know, not wanting to even go in because I was like, even this just feels too much. I was like, oh, you know.
So how do you get yourself out of a place like that?
People.
Yeah.
People, definitely. I remember having a conversation with Martin Cobbold.
Yeah.
Fantastic guy
at the Forge Elder, but not old. He has been on the podcast, but you might have to scroll back a bit.
I just had a conversation with him, and I was like, look, you know, I need to talk basically. And I, you know, I had
prompted
a few...
that. Was that like a planned thing, or was it in the moment? Or
so I'd had
like,
a couple
come
of
on,
people...
I need to get a grip. Or
yeah, I'd had a couple of people that I was talking to previously who ended up moving away, and they were great, but they were friends. Mm. So it's so difficult to have a mentor who's also a friend because you end up chatting about random stuff. And I knew that Martin Cobbold had been kind of helping my little brother through a few things. Mm. And it was just someone who I recognized as had a lot of wisdom. And I just sort of went up to him one week and it was a weird, I hadn't planned to.
Yeah.
Just went up and I basically just said, sort me out. You know, it was a recognition of I can be better than this.
Wow.
And it was after a preach at the Forge. I think it was by Johnny Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
But they were talking about these, you know, people who look at other people who seem to be where they want to be and just feel angry about it rather than doing something about it.
Yeah.
And that's very much where I was, you know. In fact, I was listening to that preach going, oh, look at Johnny, you know, he's up there. How dare he?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was, you know, I wanted to be in ministry. That's where I wanted to be. And for years, I just hadn't done, or for a year, I hadn't done anything about it. So just felt like I needed to do it. And then we had a couple of meetings with him. And eventually he just said, look, you know, you're not in church.
Yeah.
You know, you want your faith to get stronger, but you're not going to the place that can help.
Yeah.
And he basically just challenged me. He said, I don't mind if the Forge is going to be your home long term. Mm. I'm just going to challenge you to go to the Forge every week till Christmas.
Yeah.
And this was about September time.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, let's do it. And just through that, suddenly I had this kind of ignition of passion just because I was around people of a similar passion to me. Mm. And that really kind of reignited. It didn't sort all my issues out.
Yeah.
But I just had this passion again and this belief that, okay, I can be better.
Yeah. So what you then just got involved in community with the Forge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then... how many years ago was that?
So that was probably just over a year ago.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And so, how are you doing now? What does
life great. Like so,
now?
I mean, that motto I carry with me in terms of like, if you want it, you just do something for it. So I knew I wanted to be in youth work, so I got involved with 242.
Yeah.
I was exploring different avenues and chatting to people about, okay, you know, I want to do youth work and I live in Bury, so what is there I can do in Bury?
Yeah.
And worked through a lot of stuff. And I had a lot of issues still of, okay, I want to be a youth worker and I didn't quite feel I was had enough value if I wasn't a youth worker.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a moment sort of earlier this year where in some... I think I was reading the Bible and praying and I just had this realization of actually I'm happy where I am.
Mm.
I was working at Waitrose at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I was working 4 a.m. shifts and they're not nice. But I had this sudden realization of actually like I'm happy where I am because I've built my relationship with God up again.
Yeah, so good.
And that moment of being actually I'm happy whether I'm a youth worker or not, it was a matter of months later that the job came up. With CYM and a church in Cambridge.
Wow.
And I went for it and got it, and that's what I'm doing now. So it was a strange moment of striving for it never getting it. And then that moment of, actually, God, I'm happy with whatever you've got for me right now. And that was when this job came up. And
it's like that be still and know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I always I'm always pushing for that in my team as well. Like, so for those that don't know, I lead music team here at church, and people get their identity from what they do, not who they are.
Yeah.
So I actually use the example of like, hey, how would you feel about being part of this church if God chopped off your hands and you couldn't play an instrument, you couldn't play guitar?
Yeah.
Would you still belong here? Would you still come here? Would you still have a relationship with God? Are you Josh, who is a child of God, or are you Josh, who is the youth worker?
Yeah, definitely.
And stripping identity away, so in my case, it's stripping identity away from a musical instrument to remembering that you're just a child of God, and God can give and God can take away whatever gifts that you have, and that he's using us now, but he can use someone else tomorrow.
Yeah, and
definitely. Just bring a humility to that and just say, God, thank you for using me like this, but ultimately your will be done in my life.
Yeah, definitely.
And it sounds like you got to that place of like, actually, who I am is more important than what I do.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's a message that we all need to be reminded of, because people let us down, roles let us down, and stuff happens. Yeah, so I actually used that example with someone in my team. I don't know if it was directly with them, but someone else in my team. And someone within my team then developed like a nerve problem with their hands. And they're a drummer. They couldn't drum for at least 6 months. Who are you? Are you the drummer at the Forge?
Yeah.
Or are you the guy that serves at the Forge? Are you the child of God? You know, where is your identity placed? But I think that's a hard place to get to.
Definitely.
And it often does take, I mean, hopefully not for everyone, has to go to like the extremes of hurt that you have in losing your dad. And I can't even imagine, but it does often take getting to the low, to the depths of despair, to the slimy pit before God can pull you out.
Yeah, definitely.
As Psalm 40 or something says. Don't quote me on that. I mean, look it up. Yeah, quote me on it.
Yeah.
I'm sat with a vicar. I'm going to start calling you Vicar Josh.
Yeah, not quite.
So yeah, man. And then you got involved. Where did this like heart for like Eden Acts and social stuff come from?
Social action and like community work is always something that I've wanted to be a part of my youth work. So whether it was in church or schools or whatever it was, I always wanted that community aspect.
Yeah.
And I've been going to Eden a couple of times.
Yeah.
And they just mentioned one week that I think someone had been running their social action stuff, or Eden Acts, and had stepped down, and they were going to do one that was already planned, but hadn't got any planned after that because there was no one. And I basically sort of said, look, it's something I enjoy. Let me get involved.
Brilliant.
And had a meeting, and within that meeting, it was kind of like, well, take it. And I was like, okay, I'll take it.
So good. So to me, like, it sounds like, so for people that are struggling, I'm just wondering what encouragement we can give them. But it sounds to me like your story, your life has changed because you just said yes.
Yeah.
You've just started saying, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
I'm not qualified on paper. I don't know what it looks like, but I'll commit to going to church from September to December.
Yeah.
That was your first yes. You see a gap in Eden Acts. You're like, yes.
Yeah.
You see a gap in 242. You say yes. You see that job. You say yes. And that has transformed everything you are.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not always been an easy yes, but.
No, but I think it's a yes that actually, if it comes to nothing, then what is it really?
Yeah.
Like it's not
what have you got to lose?
Yeah, exactly. It's not cost me anything, you know, or it hasn't cost me anything of great importance or anything. You know, it's just that, you know, I'll say yes and see what happens. And
so, what would you then say to people that are in that place that you kind of were before you had that conversation with Martin? Angry at God, angry with yourself for messing up, feeling low. Feeling no purpose, no way out. What would you say to that person that's listening to this saying, that's where I am?
So I think for me, it's anything that, you know, if you feel like something's happened that you've failed or anything like that, actually it's all experience and God can use all of that for good. And actually you may not even see it, but anything like that in the future is going to be used for something good. And I think a perfect example of that is like when I was a kid, I was the quiet one. I always felt like the youth workers didn't see me because I was quiet. And it was, you know, things like that. And I felt like in conversations, I struggled to get my kind of words in because everyone else was a little bit louder than me. But actually now in my youth work, I am the confident one.
Yeah.
But it means that because of who I was, I can recognize those people in the youth group.
Yeah.
And say, actually, I'm not going to be the youth worker that forgets them. I'm going to make sure they feel included.
Yeah.
So that's just an example, but it's that kind of thing massively, of actually all of these things that you've been through. Well, you know, they suck. I'm not going to lie that they and say they don't, but they, because they do, but actually you can use that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And moving forwards, you know, keep like, don't forget about them.
Yeah.
Move on, but don't forget about them.
Yeah.
So keep them with you.
Yeah, definitely. Man. Brilliant, mate. Thanks so much for coming on and being honest and
yeah,
sharing. Is there anything you want to tell us about coming up, like with Eden?
So on the 5th is the Eden Christmas.
Christmas
gathering. So I think we're going to have a few games, bit of music.
Acosta.
And Costa, yeah. So you can get yourself a coffee.
Free coffee?
No.
Ah, that's awkward.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, come and find out. Yeah. You'll buy everyone a coffee. Coffees are on Josh. Great, cool. Play the music.
The first person to arrive, I'll buy a coffee for.
Oh, there nice. Nice. The person to arrive, not on team. Yeah.
Yes.
Great. That's an invitation there you cannot refuse.
Yeah.
Sam Fenn has just walked in wearing shorts.
Quite actual short shorts.
My goodness me. It's freezing. Yeah. Anyway, Josh, cool. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Alex, thank you. Sam, thank you. And I think you're coming on in a few weeks for panel.
Yes.
So don't go anywhere.
If you have me back.
Don't go anywhere. Love you all. Bye. Play the music. I always forget. Why do I keep forgetting? Have you done a check there, Alex?
I'm fine. Yep. Great. I'm here. Yeah. Great. Okay. Mm-hmm. I sound good. Yes.